As I was reflecting on this gospel passage last week, it was an interesting thing that I came across an article about a hungry fox that entered a chicken pen. From Aesop the Greek, who wrote fables that included foxes 500 years before Jesus was born, to fables and stories from the Americas, from Asia and Africa, the fox, as a character in literature, is someone who is almost always a trickster who outsmarts its opponent. In English language, to say that somebody has outfoxed you means that they have prevailed against you in a sneaky, crafty, and intelligent way. So, we expect to know how the story ends when a fox slips into a chicken pen. But for this hungry and unfortunate fox in northwestern France, his story did not end as tradition expects. Instead, the 6,000 hens in this chicken pen gathered around this fierce beast, each one pecking away at him. It was Thursday, and they weren't ready to be dinner or to let any of their feathered friends be sacrificed to the greedy fox. The head farmer found the fox lifeless. He had been backed into a corner by the angry, pecking hens. I admire how powerful a group can become when individual members stop worrying about how to protect themselves as individuals and think instead how they can support one another in response to an enemy. How cool would it have been if Jesus and his band of underdog followers, disciples, the formerly blind, the formerly leprous, and the woman who no longer was bleeding, the children whom Jesus welcomed, Lazarus' son who had been raised from the dead, and Mary carrying her jar of precious ointment, and Martha doing the dishes, turned to face Herod, whom Jesus called that fox. Imagine if they had been able to cast upon Herod and all of Jesus' enemies the same fate that Jesus' enemies had in store for Jesus once he got into Jerusalem. What if Jesus did not have to die by execution because his followers were so unexpectedly clever at defeating Jesus' enemies? Psalm 27 says, "When evildoers assail me to devour my flesh, my adversaries and foes, they shall stumble and fall." But that's not how this story goes. Jesus does not receive this kind of protection from God. There was no uprising. Jesus did die. Instead, Jesus offers a different kind of image. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often I have desired to gather you as children together like a hen gathers her brood under her wings. Yet you were not willing. Like any mother worried about her child, Jesus doesn't give up on Jerusalem, even when he knows that going there will send him right into the fox's den. Jesus' conversational partners in this passage are the Pharisees. Typically, they were depicted in the Gospels as antagonists, meaning people who wanted to challenge, trap, and even silence Jesus. "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees," Jesus would often scold them, especially for their hypocrisy. And yet, repeatedly in the Gospels, the Pharisees show up right alongside Jesus as conversational partners, dinner guests, and members of the crowd to whom Jesus preaches. For as much as they were scolded by Jesus, they were clearly in close relationship to Jesus. Well-versed in theology, they were often interested in debate. And Jesus always took the bait. It reminds me of my cousin Bill, who got into a Facebook debate with me over the weekend when he trolled one of my posts. He and I each believe strongly about the role of the government in protecting people from gun violence. And we have polar opposite beliefs on how that should be done. After several back and forths, neither of us had the other convinced. And so, we brought the conversation into neutral territory by talking about sports, which is code for saying, in the end, as much as we disagree, we're still family. As today's passage tells us, the Pharisees were close enough to Jesus, like family, to warn him, run and hide, for Herod wants to kill you. They were trying to bring Jesus into a neutral territory. But Jesus chooses not to be neutral. Here, the Pharisees expose Jesus' biggest vulnerability, and it is one he shares with all of us, his mortality. But it is not a vulnerability Jesus hides from, even though it was real. Herod Antipas, that fox, as Jesus called him, had killed John the Baptist and had his head served on a platter. Josephus, the Jewish Roman historian, wrote that Herod feared that the great influence John had over the masses might put them into his power and enable him to raise a rebellion. Some wondered if Herod might have feared that Jesus was actually John, come back to life after his beheading. Regardless, Jesus's growing following represented an influence that was a threat to Herod's power. Barbara Brown Taylor, a preacher who comes from my home state, talks about life in rural North Georgia in the mountains where she lives. She raises chickens there. And a friend once gave her a tiny orphaned guinea chick. She chose a silky hen to be the foster mother for this lonely chick. Here is how she describes the introduction. First, I lay on the grass while she and the baby watched each other through the mesh of the cage. Then I placed the chick inside. Both she and the baby froze. The baby cheeped. The hen did not move a feather. The baby cheeped again. The hen stayed right where she was. The baby took a few steps toward her. I held my breath. The gray hen lifted her wings. The baby scooted right into that open door. When I checked on them an hour later, all I could see was a little guinea chick head poking out from under that gray hen's wing. Taylor continues this adoption process anytime she finds herself with a chick that has no parent. It still makes her anxious as she describes, "Please, please, please don't peck this baby," I plead. "It's so little. It has never laid eyes on any mama but you." Then I set the chick in the cage with her, sitting down where I can watch what happens. The baby cheeps. The hen does not move a feather. The baby cheeps again. The hen stays right where she is. The baby takes a few steps toward her. The hen lifts her wings. "Come to mama, honey." Jesus' love is like that for us. No matter the risk, Jesus is willing to take us under his wing. No matter how alone or forgotten we may find ourselves, Jesus recognizes our need and tends to it. No matter if we don't match the kind of people Jesus came from, Jesus collects us as one of his own. No matter the dangers that lurk, Jesus is willing to go that way today, tomorrow, and the next day. When Jesus set his face toward Jerusalem, he was orienting his direction in the present for the vision that he believed could be our tomorrow. And he saw in that direction life. He saw in that direction salvation. He saw in that direction defeat of the powers that seek to destroy and oppress. If any of you want to follow in Jesus' footsteps, then set your face today toward the vision you want, the vision to which God calls you for tomorrow. My heart was and still is heavy from the tragedy and evil that caused a white supremacist to take the lives of innocents while they were at prayer in mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand on Friday. I want to relay to you that I have communicated with the president of Darul Islah, one of our neighboring mosques in Teaneck, to offer prayers and support on behalf of our congregation as they mourn an attack on Muslims. I want you to know that the mosque thanks us for our prayers and support and invites any who are interested to an event of prayers for peace and healing at 3:30 p.m. today. See me after church and I can get you the contact info. On the same day that this shooting took place, young people around the world were skipping school for the day to demonstrate against climate change. This movement was started by a 16-year-old Swedish girl, Greta Thunberg. Several years ago, Greta, who has Asperger's syndrome, became depressed over the state of the world. So depressed, she couldn't sleep, she couldn't eat, she even stopped growing. What pulled her out of this serious depression was using her voice for a change. And as she explains it, people who are on the autism spectrum sometimes get a special interest in something. This, she said, is my special interest. She began to share her concern over the problems of global warming, rising ocean waters, endangered and extinct animals and reefs, the impact consumption by the wealthy has on the world's poor in destroying their habitat. She calls the selfish habits of older generations, including mine, into accountability. You only talk, she says, about moving forward with the same bad ideas that got us into this mess, even when the only sensible thing to do is to pull the emergency brake. You are not mature enough to tell it like it is. Even that burden you leave to us children. So on Friday, from Seoul to Sweden, from Uganda to the United States, children and teenagers from 100 countries skipped school to draw attention to global warming. These chicks are starting to poke their heads out from the mother hen's wings, something that has nurtured them to look for something more, something better than what they see around them has called them forth. But what they want more is not more comfort at the expense of others. What they want more is not the easy availability of more gadgets and disposable things at the cost of the Earth's welfare. What they want more of is more years of clean air. They want more hope that the children and grandchildren of this generation will not suffer because of our choices today. They want more tomorrows. Jesus' journey to Jerusalem had a purpose rooted in that hope. It was not risking his life just for the sake of suffering. He took this journey so that we would know the way when we are facing our own foxes and Pharisees and know that we do not travel it alone. He took this journey so that we might have hope enough to invest it in a future beyond today. He took this journey for life, not death. Now, what journey are you willing to make to bring forth God's vision for tomorrow? Amen.